have on the line with me Liz Slate, and she's from the Alchemical Nursery, and that's out in Syracuse. And shortly joining us will be Frank Satira. And Liz, do you want to start us off with a little bit about the background of the nursery?
The Alchemical Nursery Project is our 501c3. We were incorporated back in May, and that was in 2008. So we're a very new organization, and our long-term goal is to establish an urban eco-village in Syracuse. So to do that, we've been involved in a lot of different activities and events throughout the city, and we've been partnering and working with a lot of different organizations, because most of what we're trying to do also is to on a lot of different levels just promote sustainable urban development in the city. So.
Hang on one second, I got Frank coming on. Okay, Frank, are you with us still?
I'm here, yeah.
Okay, Liz was just giving us a little background about the Alchemical Nursery Project.
Great.
And telling us that you were just getting started, you're a 501c3. And to have an urban eco-village out in Syracuse.
Yes.
Did you want to continue from where you were, Liz? Or do you want to let Frank say a few words?
Sure. I think that would be good. I think Frank should tell us a little something.
Sure. Well, the basic premise, the overall overreaching goal is, of course, the urban eco-village. And what's important to realize is that that's a long-term goal for us, as any project of that scale would be. So in the meantime, we're doing a lot of other initiatives and a lot of other projects that are not only intended to move us towards that goal of creating that eco-village, but also can stand on their own as valuable projects and valuable resources for the community at the current time as well. So we're just looking to the future. We're working in the present with that goal in the future.
And what was the inspiration for the eco-village?
Well, I think that both Liz and myself have come from a background where we are passionate about sort of ecological living, living close to the land, lowering our resource usage, and all those kinds of things. So we both have that within us. And then Liz, of course, I think should probably take over here and for telling you about the specific plan for this eco-village, because she created a document as a part of her studies related to a specific plan. And then when the two of us met last year, we sort of sparked each other's interest a little more in this, and we put it into action. So maybe, Liz, you want to tell him about your initial ideas?
Sure. Yeah. When I was going to school in Syracuse, I started a degree back in 1999. And this was at Syracuse University. I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do. I was one of those people. I was flip-flopping around. And I did end up falling into sociology as a major, which was good for me, because I was like, well, why didn't anyone tell me this stuff before? You know, I was really kind of upset about it, to start to learn about all these things in the world that were really dysfunctional. And
to name a few, what kind of dysfunctions?
Just in terms of, like, for one example, the effects of the globalization of the economy.
Uh-huh.
And how, you know, that's really actually not all that great for most of the people in the world.
Right.
You know, how the WTO operates, et cetera. So I was learning about all these things, and I was horrified, of course. And I also felt very passionately about, wow, I have to do something, you know. But the more I learned and the more I realized, wow, you know, oppression is inherent in the capitalist system, et cetera, et cetera. I kind of felt, like, a little hopeless and eventually more or less apathetic about what could I do, you know. So, and of course, then school was also really expensive, and I couldn't afford to pay for it anymore. So I dropped out, and I was just, like, you know, kind of messing around. I was working. I ended up meeting my future husband, and we went traveling in Mexico. We went biking through the mountains of Oaxaca, and ended up going to Rainbow Gathering in Costa Rica. And So I started to see these alternatives, and I started to get exposed to these different lifestyles and the way people are trying to do things just a little bit differently from what I was used to and from what I was brought up in. I learned about eco-villages. I lived on an organic farm. I lived on a permaculture homestead. I had a daughter. And that was really when it hit home. I was pregnant, and I was like, how am I going to raise my child? Where am I going to raise my child? What's the best environment? And I came to the eco-village movement. I looked all around for one, and of course, there are many in the country, but I couldn't find one that, in my opinion, was just what I was looking for, because I wanted something kind of big, you know. I was looking for an eco-city, basically, that did not exist. Because I didn't really want to be out on 40 acres with, you know, 12 other people. I'm a city girl, and I see that there's a lot of value in having a lot more people around each other to, you know, because everyone has a different idea. Everyone has a different talent, you know. So many hands make light work. And so I decided, well, you know, if I'm not finding what I'm looking for, I guess I'm just going to make it. And so that was when, back in 2005, I wrote the original vision document for a community, for an eco-city. And, you know, whatever, the rest is history, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Your story is of particular interest to me because living here in Utica, we're very close to you guys. So it's nice to see something like this happening so close to home.
Yeah, and well, the thing about it is, too, that, you know, it's happening here in Syracuse, but our intention all along is that it's going to be something that we can share with others outside of Syracuse. And you know, we have things in place right now. We have our, you know, website and our discussion forums and our networking outside of the city. So we want to share and share alike.
Yeah, I just wanted to also mention that last year I wrote a research paper on the Eco-Village movement, and it ended up being accepted at the Eco-City World Summit, so I presented in the academic session last April. And, you know, this is the other side of the country, and it's San Francisco and California, but it just was amazing to go to this conference, and all of the people there, I just felt like it was one big happy family, you know, because I mean, when you meet other people and you're of like mind and you're all passionate and you're all doing stuff, you just, there's this certain level that you're all vibrating at where you can just really feel like you're jiving and you're connecting. And so I feel like our tribe, like those of us who see problems but also see solutions and are trying to innovate, we're just like this big global tribe, and it's pretty cool. I mean, you see that in the rainbow as well. So,
I think also it can be difficult or lonely when you feel that you're going against the grain of the culture. You see what's happening with certain things culturally that you don't want to identify with, and so you're looking for alternative, and you're looking for other people who are interested in similar things. Like when it comes to something like here in Utica, every time we flush the toilet, it goes into a sewage that's combined with stormwater. So when it rains too much, raw sewage pours into the Mohawk River.
Oh yeah, we have the same problem here.
So that's something with this culture that I don't want to identify with. I don't, you know, want to be defecating into a river.
Yeah, and that's the whole CSO, the combined sewage overflow issue. And like Liz just said, we have that problem in Syracuse as well. And we're hoping to, you know, try to move people past that. You know, we're getting this property on Otisco Street here on the west side soon, and we're going to be creating, you know, an ecologically safe house, you know, demonstration education site, you know, work site for us, living site, and, you know, we're hoping to be able to take it off the grid as much as possible, which would include things like not contributing, you know, our waste into the municipal sewage system. But, of course, that's going to be a process likely because we have the same codes in this city, Syracuse, that any other city would have. So it's not so easy to just say, okay, I'm not going to hook up to the sewage system.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be, you know, work around it. And I think that's another important part to make about what we're doing is that, you know, Liz said that we didn't want to be out on 40 acres in the countryside somewhere, separate from everything and everybody else. And so part of that, living in the city, besides the benefits of, you know, having lots of resources close by and also being able to affect a lot more people with what we're doing on a close scale, is the fact that there are more of these systems that we have to deal with, you know, a lot more things that we can't just sort of fly under the radar with, and also that we don't want to necessarily fly under the radar with, because we don't want to be just one group of people having, you know, chickens in our backyard in the corner of the city and saying, look, we have chickens, when nobody else can have chickens because the codes aren't allowing it, and other people may not want to fly under the radar.
Right.
So we're trying to not only do things that are outside the norm in the mainstream, but also to try to work within the system that's present and try to change that system for the future so other people can do the things that we want to do as well.
That sounds excellent.
Yeah, you got it, Frank.
I'd like to ask you guys, what is the alchemical part of Alchemical Nursery?
Alchemical. Alchemy is
beautiful.
Process of spiritual growth and transformation. So when we're talking about an alchemical nursery, we're talking about an incubator for growth and transformation, for change. And we're invoking that because we see that spirituality is an essential part of everything that we do. Not in a dogmatic way, not in a, like, you know, go to church every Sunday and pray, but having some sense of interconnectedness, you know, some sense of, I don't know if you'd call it faith, but just a belief in the ability of the universe to provide, and a belief in love as something that, you know, if you can't agree about much of anything with someone, you can usually agree on love,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that love exists, and that we as people all would like to feel loved and to give love, you know, whether or not some people are capable of it or not. I think everyone would agree on that basic thing, you know. I mean, you can break it down to semantics and get into hours and hours of dialogue and debate with people that are even more or less of like mind with you about, you know, setting out bylaws for an organization, for example. And it can be pretty overwhelming and just like, Jesus Christ, do we really have to go there? But, yeah, of course you do, because you want consensus and you want everyone to feel comfortable with whatever you're setting out there. But at the end of the day, it's like, hey, don't we all agree? Yes. Do we all agree about love? Yes. You know, and it's like, okay, we'll take it from there, because people can get upset. And, you know, it's like, hey, don't take it personally. You know, we just need to work some things out here.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of response have you guys received so far? What are you getting? A lot of people who are interested in this, and what kinds of people are being interested in this?
Yeah, well, I wanted to just follow up on just a few minutes back. We were talking about how you know, there's people who are looking for this sort of thing, and us wanting to be, you know, a source for them to be able to reach out. I think that Liz would echo this, and she can maybe tell you about some of her personal experiences. But I, you know, people are contacting us regularly. Who are from this area of the country, this area of upstate New York, or from further away, outside of the state, across the country, you know, trying to network with us and work with us. And just for another example, I had a woman contact me yesterday through the Couchsurfing Network, and I don't know if you're familiar with that. I can describe it further if you're
not.
Okay. Well, Couchsurfing is a website network that puts people together who are traveling or who need, who want to connect and who are want to have a place to stay. So if I'm traveling to, you know, I'm hopping down the East Coast and I'm on my way to Florida, I can get on this Couchsurfing Network and I can make contact with folk along the way and see if they have a couch to offer up for me to stay the night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really nice thing. I used Couchsurfing when I was in Iceland, and I also just recently, on a local basis, I used it when I went to Rochester for the NOFA New York conference earlier this year, and stayed with some new friends now who I have in Rochester.
Oh, that's excellent.
Yeah. So this woman from she lives in Auburn, New York, contacted me because she read my profile on Couchsurfing and said, "Oh, you know, this looks like interesting stuff that you're doing." She's like, "I don't need a couch to stay at. I live in Auburn, and I've moved back to the area after, you know, being away for a while, and I'm trying to connect with people of like minds." And so, you know, things simple as that to things like you know, our pending relationship with the Interdependent Project. Liz, you want to talk more about that?
Oh, the Interdependent Project. Yeah, gotta love what they are doing. So cool. They are a group out in Grass Valley, California, and they've put together this fabulous website, and it's all about providing resources for the eco-village movement at large, like the global eco-village movement, and also trying to make connections and help them to network, providing resources. They have a fabulous radio show that they've started. They just have a lot of different things going on their site, and it's pretty cool. And when they launched, I think it was about, what do you say, Frank, 2 months ago?
Yeah, around that time.
Okay, so when they launched about 2 months ago, they put an announcement up on the Global Eco Village Network listserv, and I saw it, and I was like, wow, this is great. I mean, got to connect with these people. So I checked out their site. I sent them an email, and we've been going back and forth. We're pretty excited about maybe putting together some kind of a video because I just actually kind of jokingly, I was like, hey, you know, we should make the, in terms of cross-promotion and working with each other, we should make some kind of an alchemical wedding of the Grass Valley and the Snow City, you know, because usually the alchemical wedding is invoking images of the wedding of opposites,
uh-huh.
You know, because that's like the yin and the yang and whatnot. So, you know, they're in Grass Valley, and here we are in Syracuse, Snow City, you know, because it snows like Jesus Christ. I mean, well, you can relate, you're in Utica, so...
Uh-huh.
And they love the idea. They're like, that's great. We should make a video out of it. I was like, wow, I never even thought of that. That's a great idea. So we're going to make this silly video together. And I mean, it's just, it's awesome. It's just really neat to connect with people. I mean, you know, the wonders of the internet, but even connecting with people locally. Every day, someone else, I find out about some other person that's doing an amazing project. And I mean, to know it all, obviously, just starting out day one is impossible,
mm-hmm.
and you'll keep learning about people because there's a lot of turnover here, too. You know, people come and people go with the university. Unfortunately, we wish more of them would stay, but
mm-hmm.
you know, just the more you learn about all the people in Syracuse, especially, that are just, you know, trying to fight the good fight and do what they can, it's very inspiring, and I feel very blessed to work with all these people. It's really cool.
I'd like to hear about what you guys are doing for a couple different areas, energy production, food production, transportation, and I guess if you're going to be doing humanure for your toilets or try to implement something like that.
I started to touch on that earlier when we were talking about, you know, the combined sewage overflows and the sewage issues and things like that. That's definitely something that we would choose to do and that we are going to do at some point in the future. Right now, it's a matter of trying to figure out how to make it work, you know, like I said, within the system, within the property that we're acquiring and whatnot. And, you know, we have lots of resources and even experience with this. I lived at a homestead that for 2 years that had composting toilets, and we did humanure composting and reuse of that then on our tree crops. And so, you know, I've been in that experience. I think Liz probably has as well. I also personally know Joe Jenkins, who's the author of the Humanure Handbook.
Excellent.
And so, you know, he's talking about if we need somebody to talk to, you know, the city or talk to, you know, the codes officers and things like that, I'm sure that I could probably get him to say a word or two on our behalf at some point along the way. So I'm thinking, you know, hey, this is great.
He's also,
you know,
a slate roofer.
Yeah, he's also a slate roofer, and he wrote the Slate Roof Bible. And so, you know, we're going to have to likely redo the roof on this house as well. So slate would be a great, great thing to be able to do.
Plus, it's my last name, by the way, which is
yeah.
so cool.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I had a guest on who was from New Mexico or Arizona, I forget which, but I think it was New Mexico. It's a state senator, and I called his office to make the appointment, and I told him that I can't have you on this week because I'm having Joe Jenkins on.
Oh,
and
the
guy who was the secretary for him was like, Joe Jenkins, the Humanure Handbook? And he got so excited, this guy who was the secretary for the state senator. And they said that humanure toilets are allowed in some places there. They do have codes that regulate the use of humanure toilets.
Okay, maybe you can give us the contact info for who that was, because if they've got codes that are working along that line, we'd probably want to see them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got some plug-and-play language we can shop around.
I definitely can give you guys some contact information after the interview.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great.
What about power generation? What are you guys thinking about for electricity? Or are you going without electricity?
Liz, you want to jump in on this one?
I think that you should, because you're basically the energy guy at the SBDC. So I personally haven't been doing a lot of work in myself. It's something that we see as necessary, but with all of the things that we see as necessary, obviously, at least in my part, I've given some more energy to some things than others right now.
Yeah.
Before you guys go on, Liz, I'd just like to ask you if you could be a little bit louder. For some reason, the phone is cutting you back. You were perfectly loud earlier, but somehow this line is making you quieter now.
Okay, that's fine. Am I louder now?
Yes.
Okay. It might have been just because I was moving around my phone.
Okay.
Sorry.
Not a problem.
Yeah, she usually doesn't have a problem speaking up, so.
for flipping loud, right?
Yeah. Well, so Liz and I both do alchemical right now as sort of our, you know, we do it as volunteers right now. It's an organization that we started, but we're still in the process of putting in funding and revenue-producing programs so that we can get, salary positions and pay ourselves to do this valuable work and whatnot. So to make ends meet, of course, we have jobs, and my day job is for the Small Business Development Center. I'm the Green Business Advisor here in Syracuse, and I work with energy-related topics. I manage a grant program that provides free energy assessments to small businesses here in the city, and then I also network with a bunch of other green business-related people and resources and things like that. So I've sort of got some background and interest in this, and I'm doing some work and trying to get people to do some of the things that we want to do. But, you know, we're going to take things a step further as well, besides just doing the energy assessment and doing the smart things like turning off your lights and changing your bulbs and making sure that your building envelope is secure. We want to take it a step further to things like passive solar design. So designing our house and our other structures that we're going to be working with to take in as much solar radiation and heat and then store that within solar mass to heat throughout the day and into the night as we can. Also trying to heat the house with renewable resources such as wood. We can look at opportunities such as willow coppicing. So I also have a forestry background. And one of my future interests for alchemical and personally within the city of Syracuse is to do some urban forestry projects, one of which I'm hoping will be some sort of project relating to the growing of willow and the coppicing of willow. Willow is a fast-growing shrub tree that you can cut back on a regular basis, say every 3 years or so, and get a usable crop of small pole-sized pieces of wood that you can use for lots of things. You can use for building, you can use for crafting, you can also use for burning. In small, like masonry stoves that are quick burning and can heat a facility. So those are, that's what we'd like to do, and those are sort of the two things that are keeping us as low as possible, I think, on the resource usage list. There's other possibilities. There's things like, photovoltaics and creating electricity that way. But, of course, photovoltaics have the issue that, they're reliant on the silicon industry and all kinds of manufacturing processes that are outside the purvey of the typical person who may have some craft or skill and want to be able to do their own design or their own structures.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd like to keep it at a level, if possible, that's doable by other people, that's replicable by people outside of the larger scale industrial manufacturing realm. So,
have you looked into any of the small scale wind generation from old motors and things like that?
No, not personally. I've just started looking more into wind because I have, through my green business advisor position, I have a client in town who it's a uniform company, and they're interested in wind, actually. And so I've started doing some research into small-scale wind turbines for them. And so hopefully, you know, as time goes on, I can find out more about what you're talking about as well. So it's like the reusing old motors, is that what you're saying?
I guess people are taking motors off of any kind of old electronic thing, like a wheelchair lift or something like a treadmill, something that has a decent-sized electric motor. People are using car alternators or motors from washing machines, and then they're putting blades on them and generating electricity with them.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah, I'll definitely have to look into that more.
Actually, our web guy, the guy Dominic Macarelli, he built our website for us, an in-kind donation of thousands of dollars, which was totally amazing. That's something that he is interested in doing. And I remember one day, and this was like over the summer, he was saying, "Oh boy, I'm so excited! I'm going out today to Home Depot to look at a couple things. You know, I think I have just an idea of all the parts that I need to start building this thing." And I mean, he's had this plan for a while. I actually haven't asked him about that in particular. He's such a busy guy, it's hard to always get in touch with him right away and to ask him about something. But yeah, that's reminding me. I would like to check in with him and see how his project is going.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to build a wind turbine.
Well, I'd like to just remind the listeners and that are out there that support your local hardware stores rather than the chains.
Yeah. Good call. Thank you very much. It's true. Although, yeah, unfortunately, well, I guess we have some left. There's one over on Geddes. There's one Ace. Well, no, I guess Ace is not local, is it?
I'm not sure. We do have a couple here, so I don't know what the situation is like in Syracuse. But
unfortunately, what is it? A Lowe's just opened last year, a brand new one.
Mm-hmm.
So and right smack dab in the middle of the Erie Boulevard sort of, you know, shopping mall district kind of place, and it's sort of people use that strip to go do all their shopping. And here we go, brand new Lowe's. There's been a Home Depot here for years, so they're obviously still making inroads in Syracuse.
Yeah, the big box.
Yeah.
I love it.
And what about transportation? Any alternative ideas for transportation, or is there a good public transit system in Syracuse?
Oh man, yeah, the public transportation system in Syracuse is pretty sad. Pretty sad. The buses, I mean, they try their best, but it's hard when they offer the buses on their services typically a bus every hour. So of course, if you miss the last bus, you would have to wait an hour, at which point you might as well just start walking, because unless you're working, you know, outside of the city or totally on the other side of the city, or even if you do work totally on the other side of the city, you can probably walk there in about as much time as it would take to just stand in one place waiting for the bus. So it's not the greatest, you know, and just in terms of the service, usually it could take up to 2 hours to get from one side of the city to the other.
Uh-huh.
Whereas if you hop in a car, it might take you like 15, 20 minutes. So, yeah, it's not the greatest. It's pretty frustrating. And, of course, like the worse it gets in terms of the service, the fewer people are probably using it. Of course, there are some people that just need to use it no matter what, depending on where they live and where their job is and their resources. I used to bike everywhere. My bike was just stolen out of my basement, which I've been telling everyone lately because I'm really upset about it. But, of course, I'm just going to go get another bike. So, in my opinion, biking is the best option for me. But then there's also just the conditions on the roads, and it's really scary because there's not a very bike-friendly city.
Right.
And, definitely I've had people honking at me, and I'm like, dude, you're in a car. Like, drive around me. You know, like, what do you expect me to do? It's not the greatest. We also have a friend, Rick DeCito, who's very passionate about biking, and we know people in the bike CNY advocacy group, so Pete King, for example, and Don Hughes. So there is definitely a small contingency of people that are pushing for improvements in the roadways to make it they're more bike friendly, for instance. Of course, I'd just say, you know, take cars out of the city, but as always, usually what I would like to do is a little bit too radical, at least to start out, so it's like baby steps, and, you know, when you're working with other people, you can't just enforce your own, like, totally leftist and wild-eyed idea on everyone, so it's like you gotta work at it in bits and pieces and just see where you can go with it, you know.
Here, I believe our buses come twice an hour. However, we don't have any bike racks on the bus, so you can't take your bicycle with you. Can you take your bicycle with you on the bus in Syracuse?
They have a couple that have bike racks on the front, yeah.
Well, you're ahead of us there, but hopefully we'll catch up in that department.
I should mention a few things, too. Centro is our municipal transportation authority here and runs the bus lines, and they have just recently upped their fares, but this is the first time they've done that in many, many years. So they've been doing a good job as far as keeping the prices down, trying to make it affordable for people to be able to use the bus lines. But they've also seen a drop in ridership, I think. I mean, they've ended up also at the same time that they reduced fares, actually dropping completely a few of the lines that go into, you know, farther reaching areas of the city that just aren't being used. Another thing about Centro is that they're putting in a brand new facility downtown, the transfer station. Right now, the downtown transfer station, which is where people traveling, you know, from point A to point C would stop, you know, at point B to transfer a bus that if they didn't have a direct line there. Mm-hmm. They're putting in a brand new transfer station downtown. It's going to be indoors. Which, can you believe, the transfer station in Syracuse, New York, that always wins the, you know, Upstate Snowball Award and, you know, how it is living in upstate, has been outside forever. So you've got all these people who have to stand outside in the snow and sleet and rain at 6 o'clock in the morning trying to catch their bus to get to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so that's really not a very appealing thing, you know, to try to get somebody to use mass transit in the city.
Right.
So this new one is going to be indoors, which is going to be great. Personally, another benefit of it being indoors is that if you've ever walked through the transfer station area downtown, I mean, you know, people are smoking and all kinds of stuff like that. You just get inundated. So I'm sure that since it'll be an indoor facility, there won't be any smoking allowed, which is another positive thing as far as that goes. And then
maybe they'll have food there.
Yeah, they could have, you know, lots of other resources for these folks since it's an indoor facility. So I'm kind of excited about that just for the city.
Right. There's also here at the college, I believe, and some places around the city, there are Zipcars, which is like a community-owned car.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know a lot about it, but heard a little.
Well, just in the past year, Syracuse has got a similar program. It's called Q's Car, C-U-S-E-C-A-R. And that's started off, and there's a Q's Car in, I think, three locations. There's one in front of City Hall. There's one in the Holly Green neighborhood. I think there's one on SU campus. And it's available for people to use. So if you don't own a car and you want to have a car available for trips, you know, if you need to take a trip to the doctor or across town, or if you need to, you know, do whatever for a couple hours. I'm a little still up in the air. I'm still trying to figure out if this is really a beneficial program or not, because it's kind of expensive. I think it's like $100 per year to actually join the network. And then it's, you know, it's a fairly steep fee. And I'm not going to quote it off the top of my head because I don't remember, but it's something that I looked at and said, yeah, it's like, you know, would it not be, you know, how does that compare to the price of a taxi or to getting on a bus or things like that? And I just don't think that it's something that a typical, you know, middle class or especially not a lower class, working class person would be able to afford if they didn't own a car.
Mm-hmm.
Just doesn't, I don't know if it's an affordable way to go for everyone. It may work for some people, but... Syracuse also, if you're familiar with the layout of the highways in Syracuse, you've got Route 690, which runs east-west through the city, and you've got Route I-81, which runs north-south through the city. And the Route 81 corridor has come in, a lot of the bridges and overhangs and overpasses are coming to the end of their life in Syracuse and are going to need to be replaced. So there's also a movement on, you know, talking about, well, should we not even replace that section of the highway, and should we instead just remove it? And this would open up the
the sort of corridor between the University Hill and the downtown section, which is which both have kind of been you know, separate from each other in a way, because you've got this big highway corridor running through, and we're trying to connect campus and city and all kind of stuff like that. So that's something that's transportation related in the city as well, that is sort of something people should be aware of and maybe even try to contribute to, you know, the conversation on that as well. And then the last thing I'll mention about transportation is that, you know, I think bicycling too is the way to go. I actually do most of my transportation now by walking, because I live really close to downtown, and my jobs, my office is only a 20-minute walk from where I live, and downtown is only a 10 to 15-minute walk. You know, a lot of my clients are located. But so what I just started a new blog recently online, and it's called Syracuse Alt Trans, and so the web URL is SYRALTTRANS at Blogspot. And it's just sort of a, you know, it's just a sort of a general updating of my alternative transportation choices and experiences and things like that. So it's really kind of basic, maybe just me like walking through and saying, oh, you know, here's some pictures from all the garbage I saw today, or I biked over this way and I found a good route, or, you know, this is what's happening with the I-81 thing, or here's some pictures of all this dog poop that I came across when I was walking through this park, and it's such a shame kind of thing. So just another way to kind of bring awareness to the alternatives and, you know, what people might experience if they're doing some, you know, things like walking or biking or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting approach. The only thing we haven't gotten to yet out of the topics that I've asked you about is food. And what kind of things is the Alchemical Nursery planning on doing for producing food for people who are part of the program?
That's, I think, the brunt of what we're working on right now, because, you know, you're thinking about sustaining life, you're thinking about regenerative practices. Obviously, sustainability is about survival, and it's about survival in a way that's, you know, egalitarian, in a way that's kind to the earth, et cetera, et cetera. So obviously, if you want to survive, you have to eat, and so food is something that we've really taken the bull by the horns there. And we are both founding members of a nascent organization or group in the city. It's a network of community gardens. And we're working with them to help deliver resources, programming, services, and also just to help them to network and connect with one another, to talk with one another. And obviously, when you build a critical mass, in any way, and you have more of a voice, you can ask for things, you know, because an issue right now with community gardeners is land tenure. Geez, you know, they've got this vacant lot, and there are thousands of vacant lots in the city,
mm-hmm.
but darned if they could, you know, put a tree on one, because you never know, they might sell it out from under you within a year to build a house on it, which, of course, never happens in most cases, but because there is that, the city isn't willing to just hand them over here and there, and they're just, they've got this, like, concept of, you know, maybe they'll eventually be able to put it back on the tax roll. I mean, they would want to charge taxes regardless, but, you know, get more taxes out of it eventually and redevelop it, you know, thinking that suddenly there might be a boom, and instead of people leaving the city in droves, people will start staying and coming back, and they'll need to develop and build more houses, et cetera, and redensify. I mean, I think redensifying is good to a certain extent, but it should be done also with an eye for, in terms of proper planning for the preservation of green space in the city for a number of reasons, such as to reduce the effects of CSO and combined sewage overflow and yada, yada, yada. I mean, there's countless reasons in terms of also neighborhood beautification. And so, basically, we're looking at trying to advocate for the efforts of community gardeners. And obviously, community gardens are a lot more about community. They are also about food production and also about education. But there's a lot more about people coming together and building community with one another. So in addition to that, we're also developing an urban CSA program, which we will be starting out of our property that we're going to be getting over on Atisco Street, just the start, and then we're looking to transition into a larger space in a warehouse, which we're working on a warehouse project with a number of different nonprofit and for-profit entities, which we'll be developing that as a cooperative entity, the community exchange cooperative or community gateway model. So basically, the urban CSA, we want to encourage people in the city, whether they are a group of community gardeners or whether they're an individual, to not only grow what they need to eat, but then also to be able to sell some of it. Because I think a lot of times people are like, yeah, it sounds like a great idea, but I don't have the time. You know, everyone's so busy, they're just trying to make ends meet, you know, they got to pay the bills. And of course, but they still would think that, yeah, it could probably save them money, and you can't get any fresher than right out of your backyard, right? So we're trying to kind of connect the dots for people and make it just a little bit easier. Well, maybe you could make the time for it if not only would you be saving money on your food bills by growing some of your own food, but you could also make some money by selling some of it. So that's our concept for the Urban CSA program that we're going to be starting up as soon as we can here. So our work is on many different levels, all interconnected, and it's pretty exciting just to see how people are very receptive and responsive, and you know, we're very optimistic about that program in particular.
And how much land are you guys going to be farming?
Well, starting off, the space between behind the house that we have, and also Liz mentioned Rick DeCito, who's a friend of ours, who is the owner of the Gear Factory, which is another warehouse project in the city. He's renovating that into artist studio space and studio residences. He has the house next door to us, and the two lots behind his home, we're going to work together to design and grow on those together. So I think total, it's about a quarter of an acre, maybe a little bit less than a quarter, you know, probably less than a quarter of an acre, but it's a start. And you'd be surprised as far as how much money, if you're growing intensively and dynamically, using really good soil, you know, great compost, you can make some of the estimates that I've seen for a quarter acre, you can make, you know, $10,000 in vegetable sales over the course of a year's growing season. So it's something that, you know, can be done on the small scale by lots of people in the city who have that sort of space to start off with.
And do you guys have a greenhouse for starting off, or not yet?
Well,
not yet.
That's something that we would like to include in our site plans for this property that we're going to be getting. We do have access to several greenhouses. There are some old greenhouses over in one of the parks. That's actually something that's owned by the city. And we recently negotiated a deal with the city of the city's Parks and Rec Department, so that we could get into those greenhouses. And in terms of this community gardening group, which is called Syracuse Grows, one of the core group members, working group members, Teresa Doherty, is an environmental science teacher at the Corcoran High School. So she basically kind of put that idea forward and wanted to pursue that as a space where she could teach her students how to grow things. So that's what she's doing right now. They already started their winter greens. I guess it's not really winter greens at this point. I'm not exactly sure what they're starting. She was talking about winter greens, I think lettuces at one point. So they're already in the greenhouses and doing it. And then there's also a man, William Manciotti. I'm not sure if I'm saying his last name right. He's out in, I think, Liverpool. So he's kind of more like in the suburbs, but he has a greenhouse, and every year he grows starter plants and then brings them in and gives them to all the community gardeners. And he's pretty well networked with all of the gardens that are up and running in the city right now, such as the garden on Midland Ave. There's a garden on Newell Street. There's a garden on Cannon Street. There's a couple other Southside gardens. So he's mainly helping them out and getting starter plants to them.
And for people who are interested in your project, how can they learn more about it or get involved?
Yeah, the website, of course, would be a great first step. It's www.alchemicalnursery.org. From that website, they could access, you know, our contact information. If they want to send a
email to our general account. It's info@alchemicalnursery.org. They could also search on the website for profiles, and they could find Liz or myself there, Elizabeth Slate and Frank Satira. They could find our profiles and send us a direct message through the website as well.
And is there any resources you'd recommend to the listeners who just maybe aren't in the Syracuse area but are just interested in similar types of things? Any books or movies or websites that you could direct people to?
Ah, movies. That's an interesting thing. Well, first of all, we have a full list of links on our website. We use social bookmarking site Delicious, and we have a list of links that you know, there's some great stuff on there that people can check out. There's just so many resources out there that it's hard to just put forth one or two. Mm-hmm. We're both part of numerous online listservs and discussion forums that we contribute to on a regular basis. Book companies such as Chelsea Green, you know, published lots of great books related to all these things that we're talking about. And like I said, mentioning the movie aspect of things, we're actually going to be hosting in Syracuse at the end of May the International Social Justice Film Festival. And so that's something that people might want to be interested in, even if they don't live in the city, if they live outside of the city or, you know, in one of the surrounding communities, it might be something that they want to make a trip into town for, because it's going to be an event. You know, we're going to have an art auction, a trash art auction related to it, and we're going to have, you know, two nights of films and all kinds of special things happening. And the trash art auction is going to take part, and it's going to utilize, we're going to have a call for artists to come in and make art from the trash that Liz did not throw away last year. That's the best way to say it, Liz.
I'm sorry, what?
Talk about the trash art auction and your go at the last year of not putting anything out on the curb.
Oh, my project?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was great. I mean, I'm still going.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Well, that sounds
people are still saying, I can't believe you got in the bin of trash. I'm like, well, hey, it's clean. It's comfortable. Why not? Well, you'd have to see more. You'd have to go to our website. I have a widget that I embedded there. It's a video from when I was on the local news station here for a zero waste project I started a year ago to not throw anything away. So I haven't put anything on the curb for over a year.
Excellent.
It's a very interesting project.
Definitely sounds interesting. It sounds like a good experiment, and maybe it could develop into a whole lifestyle for some people.
It actually, yeah, it has. You know, I mean, once the year mark was coming up, I wrote a press release, and at the same time as I was putting that out, I started to learn of some other people in the country that were doing similar things. This guy, Sustainable Dave, did the same thing. I think he started a little bit earlier than I did. He got a spot on like CBS, and I mean, he did. He was really good with his project, though. He kept a blog, and he was monitoring everything very closely every day. I just kind of impulsively made the decision and did it, but didn't really keep very good records until now. After the fact, I'm taking pictures of everything I've accumulated over the past year, and I'm documenting it, and that will all be up online as well in a photo album. And I've got the press release and a little bit about what I did, but in terms of the blog, it was something I aspired to do, but once I got into the thick of things, just with setting up the organization and developing our website for Alchemical, it was like the blog was the major back burner for me, so didn't stop me from keeping on with the project, though. So,
is there anything that we haven't spoke about that either of you would like to address? Anything I missed in the interview?
Yeah, I have two things, actually. Well,
sure.
Two things and one short thing. The one short thing is I talked about earlier the energy efficiency program that I run. I just wanted to mention the name of that is Green Energy Aware, and that if people want to find out more about that, they can do so at the website for the Northside Collaboratory, and it's ournorthside.org. But
moving on from that, two other things that are of great importance right now for us. The first one is permaculture. And if your listeners aren't familiar with permaculture, it's the combination of the words permanent and agriculture. And it's a whole design and lifestyle system for creating permanent, livable landscapes within, you know, a city or an urban environment, geared a whole lot towards creating food, you know, and how a human lives within that system and benefits from it and contributes to it. And so permaculture is an international movement. It was started in Australia a number of years ago. There's a great, huge permaculture Bible out that, you know, lists all kinds of great ideas and teaches you how to do, you know, all these sort of excellent landscaping and food growing and, you know, systems kind of thinking, holistic zone-related outcomes that will just create a great, you know, living arrangement for yourself and for the other living organisms surrounding you. But permaculture is something that is also at the core of what we're doing as an organization as individuals, and it's going to be a core of how we design and move forward with our property on Otisco Street and our other properties throughout the city that we are, you know, that we're working with our other projects. And we're going to go as, you know, what we actually are going to have, you know, an actual permaculture center where we're going to teach about permaculture as well. Starting off at Otisco Street as well, and then also a what we're calling right now like a Green Trades Association or Green Trades School to teach trades that are related to the realm of permaculture and of self-sustainable living. You know, a lot of the green trades now, I know there's a big green movement for, you know, the government, the stimulus package to get people to do, to make jobs that are related to, you know, like weatherization and installation of photovoltaics and things like that. And once again, you know, we want to bring it back down a level to, you know, the scale it down to the point that it's more closely related to humanity and our place on this earth. So teaching people how to work with things such as clay and pottery, or teaching people how to work with bricks and masonry, or how to grow food and things like that. And permaculture is sort of the design philosophy, the living philosophy that's behind all of that. So I would encourage people. You're also talking earlier about resources they want to check out. I would encourage them highly to go on the web and do a search for permaculture and run with that, because there's a whole lot out there, and it's really valuable right now.
That's a good call for
you. Yeah, and then the other thing that I want to mention is that we realize how hard it is to do something like we're doing, you know, because we're in the thick of it, and we're putting in a lot of time and energy. And we're learning as we go along. You know, even though I worked for nonprofit organizations in the past, I never started one on my own. And there's a whole lot involved. And so we want to encourage other people to also be able to get involved and to do projects that they want to do. You know, there's like 1,000 things out there that we would love to be doing, but we don't have the time to do. Mm-hmm. But we know that other people are interested in doing and would step forth maybe if they had the ability or the resources to do something on their own. There was a couple here who we met recently who had the idea that they wanted to do a bicycling compost pickup service, for instance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, well, how does somebody go about that? Do they start a business? Do they have the resources to do that? Do they start their own nonprofit organization like we did? Well, what we're trying to do is to help people put their projects into action through our organization. And we have what's called a fiscal sponsorship program. And through that program, if people have ideas for projects that they want to do, they can approach us with that idea. If it's in line with our mission, they can be sponsored by us so that they can create this project as a charitable institution. They can use our legal 501c3 status. They can use our resources that we have as an actual incorporated organization and put those resources put their projects in action so they can you know, solicit donations, they can go after grants, they can do all the things that a 501c3 organization can do without actually having to go through the process of becoming one on their own. So, you know, we're looking to help people and to, you know, bring people on board who have valuable projects that they want to get in, underway. And if they go to our website, it's in the top right corner of our website on the top right column. It's called the Quinta Essentia Fiscal Sponsorship Program, and let people check that out as well.
Well, that's excellent. You guys are offering that kind of an opportunity to people to use your status.
Yeah.
Liz, any things that we overlooked?
No, I think that's it. You know, I mean, of course, we could We could continue to talk for many more hours, but I think we touched upon the major highlights. So, yeah.
Well, this is very exciting. I didn't know too much about your group, and now I know quite a bit, and it's inspiring that a group is developing so close to home.
Yay!
Maybe
I'm glad
you
found out about it.
Sister community in Utica.
Yes. So thank you so much for both of you joining me, and if you stay on the line, I can give you a couple of websites or different information or those places that you need about Humanure. And so, listeners, thank you for listening. And next up, we are going to hear a radio program from Third Paradigm. And so, stand by. And you guys hang on a minute.
Thank you, Pete.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.